is a Jezebel?
There's one name in the pages of the Bible that we still use today when describing a scheming, evil woman. It's the name Jezebel.
In our society, in our culture today, I don't need to tell you, if you read the headlines and you're aware of what's going on in our world, what a mess we're in today. I have one word about all of this, just one word. Jezebel.
Jezebel, the infamous bloodthirsty wife of Ahab. We still see the Jezebel spirit at work today in relationships, business, friendships, public office.
Hillary Clinton is poised to go from being an Obama minion to being full-fledged President Jezebel.
There's never been anybody in American history who has been so pro-abortion as Hillary Clinton. Nobody. Never has been. And that is the template of Jezebel.
Jezebel uses the powers of seduction to lure her victims, and Jezebel is the master of seduction.
Jezebel is a ferocious spiritual entity that has caused a lot of tragedy and harm to many people, to even geographical locations.
Any modern sense of scriptural authority would have to include the internet. Because what is authority or orthodoxy if not popularly held conceptions? In other words, sometimes the normal way of thinking about things is actually just the most popular way of understanding things. Horace Greeley said that popularity is an accident. Well, if that's true, then we know from experience that even the smallest accident can turn into wildfire.
She has a feeling of being overlooked, being a victim of the society, being a victim of men, being a victim of her circumstances. It's everything is a problem but her.
You know the rules. Get back out on the floor.
She can turn into a male or a female. That's why when you're under a spirit of Jezebel, you're not afraid of a man. That's why when you're under a spirit of Jezebel and you are a man, you're sensitive like a woman. Jezebel is not a woman. It's a spirit.
I want to get back and just do a short YouTube video. I want to entitle it Conversations with a Controlling Jezebel, or as we all know, Conversations with a Controlling Narcissist.
Obviously, when she passed over, she became even more powerful as an evil entity.
I've spoken about this in my blog, but I wanted to do a video on this channel detailing the traits of a Jezebel spirit, and you can use this video to assess your own life.
We understand about the control, we understand about the manipulation, but how would Jezebel target you?
As of 2019, these are the Google and YouTube search results for the term Jezebel. Now, I'm not trying to offend anyone who deems themselves orthodox or an authority, but in the small chance that we've misinterpreted some aspects of Jezebel, I think we owe it to ourselves to dig a little deeper. My name's Genie, and this is Scripture Unearthed.
So what can we expect from Jezebel? She's a queen. She's a daughter of a king.
She is. So Jezebel, right, she gets a really bad rap because everybody's all mad at her because she does kind of what one might have expected her to do as a foreign queen being brought in by a king who is like the man in inner national politics of that day and time and place. One of the many problems that they label on Jezebel, right, is he went and served Baal and bowed before him, right? So the problem with Jezebel is that she leads Ahab to worship Baal, right? And theologically speaking, for the biblical text, that's huge, right? Because it means, and truth be told, that's what Solomon did, right?
Right.
right? Is Solomon's problem right. is that he married all these women and he,
yeah.
right? And he followed, he started worshiping their gods,
right?
And so for the biblical text, that's like the biggest no-no out there, right? So Jezebel from the get-go can't be good, right? Because they have to make her theologically bad. Even though, let's just say she's the daughter of the king from the most powerful state in the region with shipping contacts and cedar and all of this stuff, right? Then in any other context, that would be like a great marriage, right? That's what you do is you marry off your daughters to like folks worthy. So the suggestion, the implication is that Ahab must have been somebody to nab that important of a wife.
I've read that it was such a political thing. It made trade routes better and the King's Highway or trade routes or, you know, new products. And but that's not in there.
Right. It is if you want to if you understand who her father is. Right. But the biblical text is downplaying that. And then, of course, everybody it is much easier to blame a woman for anything political, right? Than to actually unpack what's going on. And I would argue that in a lot of the so Ahab marries her knowing that she is a follower of Baal, knowing what her who her dad is, knowing all this stuff. So it's no surprise to anybody that some of this stuff is going to happen, right? And I would argue it was somewhat intentional that that was what his goal was. And then when you unpack what she ends up doing, right, is in line with why she probably thought she was. So there's this great book entitled Elna Solving wrote entitled something like Women in the House, : I can't remember the rest of the title, but like, you know, royal women in the Deuteronomistic history or something that. And what she does is she looks at all the royal women that you have in the ancient Near East and what their jobs were and what their responsibilities were, right? Mm-hmm. And they had jobs and they came in with royal staffs and they were expected to do certain things, right? Like you don't go and marry a princess of an important king to have her sit in the back and, you know.
And do her nails.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Or her eyeshadow, right? And so this whole notion that, you know, she did all these bad things, one might argue, yeah, but isn't that why she was brought in the first place, at least by Ahab? It feels that in certain places they're trying to let Ahab off the hook a little bit. Yeah, right? And that, you know, somebody's got to get the job done, right?
Right.
And so, again, it's one of these things where shame on her, you know, she didn't go through the halls of power or something. But again, it's one of these notions where when you don't have access to power, and she has more access than many others do, you have to do things differently because you don't get a royal seal that allows you to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
So it's not that I'm advocating to, you know, to kill people to get their vineyards. That's not what I'm advocating.
Right, right.
But what I'm saying is did he do his job? And we can get to Navarre.
Well, no, I get what you're saying. She's not necessarily admirable, but we can understand her better.
Right, but she's doing her job, right? You know, and so then to make all women problematic because one woman is doing her job and they didn't like the job that she did, right? But from a Phoenician, if I may use the term that I don't like, perspective, you know, yay her, right? She's getting, you know, she's advocating for Baal, which is probably what they wanted, right?
Right?
And she got the vineyard for her husband, which they wanted, right? And so there are some problems in that story as well.
I mean, she probably, I've read this, I don't know if it was Janet Everhart or Janet Gaines, but if she's coming from a, you know, coastal polytheist, you know, they've got some deities that are gods and goddesses, and she comes to this single male deity in the middle of the desert, it's almost like she's kind of advocating for a more liberal, free religious experience.
She's advocating for diversity.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Yeah, that's
okay,
it.
So that's
Jezebel
how
as diversity. I love that.
Right, hashtag. So that's how she gets to Israel.
Yes.
And that's like that's where she shows up first. That's 1 Kings 16:31. So
yes.
That's how we meet Jezebel.
Yes.
And then the next time we
meet
her.
It's 18:4.
which is two chapters later.
And it's like an aside, right? So it's, oh, and I'll just read the English just because it's in front of me and, you know, it's the gist of it. Is when Jezebel was killing off the prophets of the Lord, yeah. Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and hidden them 50 in a cave and provided them with food. And it's like if they wanted to make – if the biblical text wanted to show how horrendous she was by her actions, right? Don't you think they would have like told us the incident? But it's like an aside.
Right.
Oh, by the way, you know, last Thursday right. she went and had breakfast and then and when she was, I mean, it's like an aside, right? It's bizarre. It's not a main topic. And yet, I mean, it sounds bad. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I'm not advocating for that. But it's if you wanted to build her badly, right? That seems like the place, right, where you could have included a story.
Yeah, do some research.
Right, about how bad she was,
yeah.
Right? It's seemingly a reference to that same event, which isn't important enough for them to bother giving us the details. All right, so then.
She's again in 19, real quick. Now, therefore, so this is like Elijah's, this is like his call to action. He's like, all right. Go get Jezebel's prophets, all 850 people, and let's all meet up at Mount Carmel, and we're going to see which God is better. We're going to see who's the bigger God.
Yeah, right.
It's like a big showdown.
Yeah. And so wait, we're in chapter 18 again?
Yeah, 19.
Yeah. And so, and again, the problem with Jezebel's story, right, is that unlike many of our other female characters, she's not all in one place, right? She's all over the map.
Well, and I think that's an opportunity for a conflation again, too. If something isn't when things occur kind of more sporadically, then we fill in the blanks. And actually, Daniel Schachter at Harvard, the memory guy, he would say that's how our brain works anyway. We get bits of information and we always fill in the blanks with things we don't know. So there's a lot of opportunity for conflation and distortion with Jezebel because she's so sporadic in the references. It's
right?
not continuous.
It's not continuous at all. And they want to make them all bad. So that's
right,
the
right.
sort of consistent piece, right?
Right?
But the you know, the fact that she comes in and she bears children and she and we can talk later on.
Mm-hmm.
She actually seems to know what her husband like. She's upset when he's not talking to her and
yeah.
not discussing stuff with her. And she's really upset when he doesn't eat his dinner. All right.
So we're about to have this big showdown.
And then
that's 18:19.
Yep. So they summon all, and together with the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. So we have our showdown on the mountain, right?
And Jezebel's not there for this.
Mm-mm. She doesn't seem to be there at all. Okay, so she's got her 850, and they seem to get zapped, right?
Right, and they're out there, you know, hooping and hollering and sometimes cutting themselves, trying to manifest Baal. It doesn't happen.
Right.
And then Elijah kind of summons God and fire comes down and consumes the altar, the sacrifice. And that's like the big proof that Yahweh is the God of Israel.
He's the God, right?
So he wins that battle.
So he wins that battle.
And then he kills the 850.
Yeah.
He slaughters them.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Right. And so again, Jezebel's doing similar stuff. They're all doing it. But again, when your side does it, it's okay and it's legitimate and yay us.
Right.
Right. When the other side does it, you know, it's fill in the blank.
Right.
Right? And so now the way the text lays it out, it's as though she did it first. And so.
So this is like revenge and cancels out.
I guess. But still, it's icky.
But yeah, how can murder be substantiated in this?
Right. Well, this one's okay because the Israelite deity doesn't, so that makes it okay.
Well, so what's even crazier is, so Elijah, so that he has all the 850 slaughtered. Jezebel hears about it, and she sends a message to Elijah and says, I'm going to kill you. And he gets scared.
Right?
And,
so
he runs.
Right? He's afraid of her.
Yeah.
Right?
He just saw fire come down from heaven.
Right.
God won.
Right.
And then he retreats. So she's got to be an incredibly scary power. Like, I don't know the right adjective, but like when she speaks, people hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's afraid of her.
Even with the proof of God,
even with,
he's terrified.
He's got the big one on his side and he's afraid of Jezebel. And And I ask you, what does that say about him as prophet?
Right, right, yeah. You're not being a good prophet, dude.
I don't have an answer, but I'm just saying, right? Like, that's what he's afraid of her, and isn't he supposed to be fearing the Israelite deity?
Right.
Right? I mean, that's what you're, right, there's, that's what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, this one's kind of like actually baffled me for a while because literally fire just came down.
Right?
Like, there's no more proof.
Isn't that good?
Right.
I mean.
And is he afraid of Jezebel herself, an army, a group,
well,
you know?
What does it say?
2 Kings 19, 1-2.
So it says.
And Ahab told Jezebel, all, and this is the King James version
in
English.
Yep.
And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and with all how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah saying, so let the gods do to me and more also if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. Now, which, by the way, is a badass line to say. Like, this is a movie. It's like, what you did to them is going to be done to you by this time tomorrow. That's the most badass
that's
line.
Like, right? That's what mobsters say to each other,
absolutely.
Right? Like, except that it's she, yeah. Right? Like, after you just did that, you
right.
gunned down my peeps. Okay.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I dare you. Right? Yeah.
It's
I mean,
so
it's
badass.
Kind of amazing. Like, can't you see her standing there in the movie and then and she just says it and you could just see she's probably smoking a cigarette
yep.
or something when she's saying it, right? Yep.
Yeah. Very Godfather lighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And you don't usually have the woman saying it. I mean, that's
right.
the sort of kicker here, right?
Right?
Is she's saying it. And look at two, right? So Ahab comes and he tells her everything, right? So he comes home, he's like, oh my God, honey, you're not gonna believe what happened today. You know. Oh my gosh, what do I do? And then she just looks at, you know, his boys who came in with them and you just tell him this, right?
Yeah.
And then rather than Elijah say, I speak for the Lord and he has slain, he's like, and he runs.
Yeah.
Right? And I actually think Ahab's a little scared of her too. Like, she's going to be mad that I, like, you know, that her prophets died today. What's she going to do to me?
Right, right. and this is actually how Elijah gets to Sinai, right? That's how they get him.
Yeah, that's how he goes.
It's almost how they explain
he leaves town.
Connecting him to Sinai, which connects him to Moses and, like, the whole kind of
yeah.
divineness.
Well, and the thing about the desert, you know, so I've spent time in the desert in Israel, and I live in California, so I spend a lot of time
right.
in the desert, and I kind of feel like, and I grew up in Minnesota where there's a lot of trees and water and it's beautiful, but if you're going to commune with, you know, a monotheistic entity, I really think it's going to happen in the desert, right? Like, with all those trees, you can't think, right? You know, there's like wood spirits all over, but you
right.
know, if you're going to go monotheist, I think you're better off in the desert. I'm just saying, you know, it's just like you're out there and you're alone and it's so vast and it's so,
right.
you know, you're so small in this huge, vast,
yeah, absolutely.
Empty space. I I'm not trying to be an environmental determinist or anything, but there's something about the desert.
You know what? That reminds me of a quote I read in this book about Pantex, the nuclear weapons plant in Amarillo, Texas. And
that's the first thing I would conjure
right,
up.
Right, it's in the middle of nowhere. It's
right.
just a big flat desert land in Texas. And the book is interviewing these nuns and it's probing the question, how can you live in a community or be near somewhere that produces nuclear war and be a Christian basically? But the nuns are describing the land in Texas and they say, this is good land for monotheism. Because you feel so small and it goes on forever
it's
and you're
massive.
In the desert. It's just interesting to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Because
there's something about it, about the desert and, you know, being small. Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'm looking for that I'm not finding
for?
Right now.
What are you not finding?
Janet Gaines makes a reference to the Septuagint
uh-huh.
regarding what Jezebel
oh, uh-huh.
says to Elijah.
Uh-huh.
And we've already discussed how he's afraid of her. They both kill people. There's a double standard. There seems to be this equal thing. Elijah's almost equal to Jezebel.
Yeah, and
Ahab's they both
not.
Kill. Absolutely. And Gaines says that in the Septuagint, I'm not sure if this is true, not sure if you know it's true, but in the Septuagint, there's an additional line, she says, before this command to Elijah. In the Septuagint, it doesn't just say By this time tomorrow, you'll be like them. She says, you are Elijah and I am Jezebel. By this time tomorrow, you'll be dead.
Oh.
And that's and Gain says that's in the Septuagint.
You know what? I don't have my Septuagint.
But whether or not it's there, that's really, it's the possibility for it to be there is really interesting. Yeah. It's this whole kind of like equal thing.
And the way that we've been envisioning Jezebel functioning, that line is not hard for us to imagine.
Absolutely. Agreed. Absolutely.
Right. Right. Like you could, that's kind of how she's pitching herself. And what's interesting about that, and I don't know what to do with, is, you know, in the extra biblical material, Ahab is really strong and powerful, right? And in the biblical text, it seems like they're putting all of the power onto Jezebel and diminishing Ahab. Absolutely. And he's like, oh, okay, Jezebel, I'll do that. You know, tell me what to do, right? And on the one hand, what it does is it he's problematic because he follows, you know, her gods, right? But so did Solomon. And Solomon's bad, but we still love him, right? And so it almost puts him in this, it's not totally his fault. Let's blame Jezebel instead.
Absolutely.
Right? And so you do have, on the one hand, they fully admit that Ahab is problematic, but Ahab's real problem is his wife, which is also then, you know, a trope of, so men keep your women in line because otherwise, you know, they'll lead you astray, and shame on them, right? And one could argue, you know, man up, but, you know, I shouldn't say that because why not?
Woman up.
Yeah, woman up, right? They say it to us all the time, right? Like, man up. If you think that, you know, you're the king, be the be the king.
Well, Jezebel's like the epitome of woman up.
Well, and it's interesting too, because we've discussed in class a bunch of times, we talk about royal women and we talk about the fact that you have, you know, David's wives and daughters and Saul's daughters and blah, 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 blah. But you don't have sort of this history of a royal family, right? But in Sidon, you did. I mean, you get the sense that she was raised to be queen, which is different than, you know, having a dad who's a shepherd and then having him become king and then go, oh, now I'm princess, right?
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because we're all really raised somehow. Like if, even our listeners, you and I, like our parents were something, and that gives
they had expectations for us,
right,
be they good or bad,
right. But even on the smallest example, like when we sat at the dinner table, we had to say, "May I have some?" We had to say, "May I be excused to leave?" And we were expected to clean the dishes. But the point is, like in your families, even through your upbringing, you have expectations and things you're supposed to do. And she was raised in a royal house,
correct. She was probably not raised to do the laundry.
Right.
I'm just saying. Right.
She was raised to give commands and speak confidently and stand up tall. And she probably wore purple and ate the best food and handled her business.
And at the end, right, she was taught that you're the queen and you do stuff regally. And so even though this guy's going to kill you, you're going to go out with class. Right.
Absolutely.
You know, you're going out like a lady or like a powerful
like a
woman.
Boss.
Yeah, right.
Like a Beyonce.
Yeah.
Beyonce's like the modern.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like, well, she's Queen Bey.
Right.
Right?
No, you're right. They do call her Queen Bey.
They call her Queen Bey, right? I mean, so she's funny. She is, and she is treated like royalty, not just by, right, Beehive, but by everybody refers to her as that. And she commands that by the way she holds herself and by the way she, you know, if you
agreed.
Act like you're the queen, you are the queen. She is the queen.
What a great analogy.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
it. Okay. So far we've discussed kind of like two chapters of Jezebel as they appear in the text. First, she's introduced. The text introduces her as being married to Ahab, and then he starts worshiping Baal. And then the second time she comes around, we have this whole Elijah thing where they both kill prophets, and then she says, I'm going to kill Elijah. And then he gets scared and goes to hide. And then she comes back in two more chapters. So we just did 19, 1 and 2, where she sends the message to Elijah, you know what, by this time tomorrow, you're going to be like the people, my people that you just killed. She doesn't come back until 21, 1 Kings 21. And this instance is
More than the next day, and he's not dead. So, oops.
Right. Great point. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
though I would point out that in our first podcast, the deity said, if you eat from that tree, you won't live through the day. And lo and behold, Eve makes it a little bit longer. So
right.
I'm just saying.
Right.
So I've just likened Jezebel to the Israelite deity. You do with that what you will.
I can't wait for the comments.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
What no, but it's things that you would, it's things you wouldn't think about.
Right. Right.
That when you point them out, you're like, oh, it's the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do some people, why do sometimes two different people do the same things, but we judge them differently?
Right.
And then how do I do that today with people?
Right. Right.
She comes back in 21. Mm-hmm. And in the you've correct me if I'm wrong, you've already talked about it, but in a nutshell, Ahab wants this vineyard that mm-hmm. Naboth owns.
Mm-hmm.
Naboth says no, because it's my family's land.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ahab goes home and kind of whines to Jezebel, basically. Mm-hmm. And then she comes up with this plan.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "Don't worry about it, I'm gonna take care of it."
And yeah, and she doesn't tell him what the plan is, right?
Oh, didn't think about that.
Right, she just does it. She just says, "Don't worry, honey, I got it."
Did not think about that.
Right? She doesn't, right?
Yep.
And again, notice, like, I love this line. Why are you so, this translation says, why are you so dispirited that you won't eat? Like, so much that you won't even eat, right? I mean, like,
right.
This is somebody who knows her guy,
right?
Right. And it's, you know, in terms of quote unquote wifely duties, whatever they are, right? Like, she does seem concerned. She notices his mood. She notices what he's eating. She notices what he's not eating, blah, blah, blah. I mean, one might argue that she seemingly knows her spouse better than a lot of other couples that we've seen in the biblical text. I mean, that seems like a...
Right.
A real relationship, kind
and you know
of a
what?
Thing.
It's interesting because I've read that I have read other authors say that five times.
Yeah,
I've read other authors. Anyway, I've read that there's no inclination to how she like. It doesn't say and she loved him ever.
Nope.
Like
uh-uh.
They just got married.
Yep.
So we don't even know how she feels about this. We don't even know what her dad said to her.
Nope.
Before
royal wedding,
she was sent.
Yep. Doesn't matter.
So it's just interesting to note that she's very observant and really sees Ahab, actually.
Yep.
Despite how she feels about the situation, which we don't know, she's really perceptive.
Right. She's and again, what she's saying is like a thing that you pay attention to. You know, if your spouse comes home and is bummed and isn't eating, like you notice these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're royalty, and she's noticing them, right?
Right. It's like your kids coming home, they got bullied that day, and they're playing with the peas with the
right.
fork on the plate.
Right. Right.
And she says, why don't you even eat bread? Why don't you eat anything? What's wrong?
Yep.
And he says, and I'm in, okay, I found it. We're 1 Kings 21:6, got it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said unto her, because I spake unto Naboth, the Jezreelite, and said unto him,
in your life.
Yeah, that's true. Give me thy vineyard for money, or else if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give thee my vineyard. He goes to kind of like bargain a little bit. He says, I'll give you some money or I'll trade you vineyards. And Naboth says no. And can you help us understand why Naboth would say no just before we get into why? Because Jezebel enacts this plan. So I think it's important to know why it doesn't go down initially. Why is land so important?
Well, so there's a few possibilities. One is that land in Israel is supposed to be divided up amongst the people according to some plan that was sort of established in the desert, right?
Mm-hmm.
That it's not, the land doesn't belong to the people. It belongs to the Israelite deity and is giving it to the people. So land is more than just land. And if I'm not mistaken, even in modern Israel, nobody owns the land. You own a lease to the land for X number of years and land,
got it.
Right? It's different than the way that we think about land in the United States, right?
Got it.
And so there's that. Then there's this other, thing where, and there are a lot of people and people who have owned land and lived in the same place for a long time say this, this is my land. I'm defending it. You know, I don't care if a hurricane's coming.
Right.
This is my land. I don't care if a flood is. This is my land. You know, this is where I was born.
Right. That's the thing,
right. You know,
this is my daddy's land. His daddy's land.
right? And again, I don't, you know, my grandma, my parents, they lived in apartment buildings their whole life. They're from New York City, right? So, like, that doesn't resonate with me at all. But I know for a lot of people that really matters, right? This is where I was born, right? This is my family's land, right? And so it's – and. So it's hard to know which it is. And so again, it's and it could be some combination of the two. And again, because I don't have that experience, it's hard for me to understand, but you hear it and see it all over the place. And that's why people don't go during hurricanes and floods, and you hear people and fires and I'm going to protect my land. And I'm like, get out, right? It's not worth it. It's just a house, right? And but it matters to them. And so I try and not be judgmental about it because it's something I don't understand, but it matters to a lot of people.
That's a great
point. And so it could be that.
So this land really matters to Naboth.
Yes.
And then Ahab.
And it doesn't ever tell us why. It just, it does, and he's not going to do it, right?
Yeah, so Ahab wants it to, you know, make an herb garden or something like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't get it, comes home, and he's upset. Jezebel notices that he's not eating. She asks him, and he tells her, you know, I didn't get the land.
Lost the land deal, honey.
And then verse 7, and Jezebel, his wife, said unto him, Dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread, and let thine heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth, the Jezreelite.
Yep. And she says, get up and eat, right? Eat some bread, right? And she kind of says, man up, right? So, right?
She does. What's the command she gives there in Hebrew?
To Asib, Mulcha al Yisrael. Go serve the kingdom, go be kingly over Israel. Go be king over Israel.
Oh, is it a question?
No, it's a statement. Ata, which is kind of interesting. So it's you now, you will do or make kingship over Israel, right?
Wow.
Go be the king, right? Sometimes it's good to be the king. And then she says, get up, and it's a command, and she doesn't say please, right? Get up, eat bread. And make good your heart, right? And that's a command, right? You will go and you will be in a good mood, right? Your heart will be happy. And the reason why is because I am going to give to you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, right? Be happy because I'm going to take care of it. I got this one.
That's so funny.
Right?
It really reminds, like, back to the bully analogy with the kid and the peas. Don't you worry. I'm going to go talk to them
I'm going to go talk to your teacher, and she's going to take care of it, and you will have a good day at school tomorrow, so you eat your dinner. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she kind of says, man up, you know, be the king.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, in King James, it's a question.
Oh, yeah?
It says, don't you govern the kingdom of Israel? Aren't you the king of Israel? Seems to be kind of sarcastic.
Oh, she could be sarcastic. She could be
I guess she is sarcastic
later.
Are you
now going to be the king of Israel? Okay, you could make
it. But either way, she's implying you are the king.
Yeah, right? So be the king, right? And that's the thing that we were talking about earlier. She's the queen. She never once doubts that. I am the queen. I'm going to act like the queen. I'm going to do queenly things. And I am the queen. And this is what a queen does. Now, one might argue that that is bad, right? That's a system of government that has been rejected by democratic states around the world, but not
everywhere.
Not everywhere. And some people keep the kingship for whatever reasons. And it seems that there are a lot of people that would like to sideline democracies so that they can have control because democracies are hard, right?
Right.
But the king gets to be the king, and they get to decide. And she's like, I don't have a problem with that. I'm the queen. And this is what I do. And boom, done.
Well, going back to where she's from, her dad.
He's a king.
He wouldn't have gone somewhere and asked somebody for their property.
Probably not.
He would have taken it.
You'd guess, right? And, you know, I think in the modern world, with the British royal family and, you know, what Princess Caroline's daughters getting, you know, like we have royalty that have no power. And so we think of them as like rich people who, you know, have nice clothes and, mm-hmm. you know, do whatever. But that's, kings were dictators, right? Absolute dictators, right? And mm-hmm. they right. ruled absolutely, right?
Right.
And absolute power is absolute power. So the whole notion that he would go to some guy and ask for it and then have the guy say no isn't very kingly, one might argue. And one might also argue that kingship isn't very old in northern Israel, and you keep having a change of administrations, mm-hmm. Unlike in the south, right? And there's also the notion that the whole idea of kingship is problematic in the biblical text, right? So Samuel's right. like, let me tell you what a king's going to do, right? And let me assure you, none of those are good things,
right?
And so this whole notion of, right, and it's sort of the Israelite deity wants to be the king, right? Mm-hmm. And the ultimate authority. And so he's going to pick kings and has seemingly given up, like, these guys, I gave them a book, right? And they are not following it, right? And
they've so, lost it, yeah.
They're not following the rules, right? And so the whole notion of kingship is extremely problematic from a theological, from the biblical text theological perspective. And I, as a, you know, somebody born into a democratic country who kind of advocates democracy and thinks it's, with all of its problems, is still pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. I can't understand what it would be like to be ruled under a dictator.
Right.
I don't want it, but it is a different mindset. And I think that for the biblical text to question that, to question kingship, to question absolute control over a people in a day and age when that's all, that's the only form of government that was out there, it's
right.
pretty amazing.
Absolutely.
Right? You know, to live in a world governed by absolute dictators and say, you know what, that's not a good idea. I don't think I like that. Right? Is kind of crazy. And pretty out there. And to
like
come
being
up
ahead of your time, yeah.
A little bit, right?
That's where that phrase comes from, people who challenge the social norms like that.
Right. And you know, I'm a big fan of the, you know, the fathers of our nation, right? And while things weren't perfect when, you know, they got it, the parameters of what it should be, while they couldn't conceive of either one of us
right.
voting,
right?
Right.
Absolutely, you're right.
The document was drafted in such a way that you and I can easily see how we fit into it, right?
Right.
And so for this to question that kind of authority is kind of earth-shattering, if you ask me.
We got to put a pin in it there, y'all. There's just way too much good stuff to cover in one episode. You know, one of my mentors always says that the job of a historian is to make things more complicated. History's a complicated thing. And as we're learning, the more you dig and trace the roots of translation errors, the more complicated these characters become. And Jezebel, in my opinion, is among the most misunderstood and complicated biblical characters. So, join me next time, where I'll be where I always am, live from Studio B at Claremont Graduate University. My name's Jeannie, and this is Scripture. Unearthed.